The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver podcast. I'm editor-at-large Dougie Rankin and I'm joined today by David Henning of Drifter Style, who is the organiser of the Drifter Style Truck Show, taking place at the Icon Exhibition Centre on the 11th and 12th of October 2026. And it's the third year that this event has been running. It's fantastic. We're looking forward to spending the weekend there. David, how are you? Fantastic to have you on the podcast.
Good morning, Dougie. Well, it's actually good afternoon. It's just past it. Thank you very much for having me on again. Pleasure to be here. Let's bang the world to rights.
Yes, well, of course, when I first met you, you were driving at the time. So this was like prior to Drifter Style and you were out. I came out and met you in the car and had a chat with you not long after I had started on Trucking Driver. I think I was only a few months into being the editor at the time. So it was obviously well pre-COVID and an awful lot has happened since then, and we've had you on the podcast before, and you've had you in the magazine before as well. Do you want to tell us a bit about how Drifter Style began and sort of how things have developed with the show?
Yeah, so, well, like we spoke the last time of the show, you know, I was a truck driver. I met you that day in Booker's.
And, yes, Livingston.
That's right. And I was driving for McGrews at the stage, and then I did a year and a half at the local company here, Ward Groupage. And then it was just the itch obviously came to clean the vehicles and stuff, and then obviously turned that into the business. And then after being to the truck shows in Europe, and I seen the state of the truck shows, what they had got into here, you know, they were really getting into a bit of a dire, you know, state, and people all fall over themselves and vomit and stuff like that. So I wanted to create this environment where it was a little bit more approachable for the outside public that maybe aren't involved in the industry. And by that, it was whenever I went to Sydney for the first time and I seen at the shows, you know, there was the grandfather and the grandmother with the grandkids, or there was the mum and the dad with the kids, or the aunt and uncle had their nephew and niece there with their own kids. You know what I mean? It was just a lovely all round family affair. And then there was even just people there that were not even anything to do with the industry. And I just thought there's something lovely about that. And even the atmosphere of it was very calm, very relaxed. And we had these absolutely stunning trucks around us. So I was like, right, I need to emulate that back home. But to do that, there's only one way to do it. It has to be indoors because of our weather. And that's really where Drifter Style came from. And I don't know, the first year I had the show and I got big hitters from Europe. And it was purely just having the balls to go up and ask them at the show and say, look, you know, you've did all these shows in Europe. How about you chance yourself with two islands off the western tip of Europe, you know, and then you're going to be a real showman. And you know what? It's not that they bit for it. They loved it. They came, and you know, we've got people coming back year on year from mainland Europe. And it's so even now going into the third year, I'm like, what the hell? People are still coming back, and there's more interest coming from Europe, and it's being spoke about in Europe. And I think it just goes to show if you've got a passion about something rather than thinking about making money. Okay, it has to make money. Yes, it's a business after all. But I think if you grow when the passion's there, the money will come through time, and the business will grow through time. But you can't hide passion. And when these people see passion, they're very, very passionate people themselves. They're very passionate people themselves, you know?
Yes, it's infectious. And I find that people who have the sort of, like you say, the passion and the interest, they tend to gravitate and find each other. You'll find fleets where they've got a lot of guys who are like super into cleaning the trucks and they get supported with that. So, and then other guys see that and they're like, yeah, well, I think I would like to be a part of that there as well. Obviously, there's other, the job has to be all right as well.
And that's right.
The whole package of it. But, you know, it's like you can go one way and you can have ever decreasing circles with things, or you can go the other way and build something, you know, positive in an industry which is quite often overrun with, you know, negativity or adversity.
Yes. So, well, you know,
Drifter style, it's an exhibition of trucks, and it's all indoors at the Icon Centre. So, and it's sort of high end trucks from a variety of different places and a variety of different sectors.
So, it originally set out to be, you know, the top of the top. And then we got literally the best of the best. And to be fair to everybody who came to my show, every single one of them stepped up to the mark. You know, there was guys who are coming with trucks that maybe 4 years ago were pretty cool, but they just weren't as clean as what they were whenever they arrived to my show. So therefore, the boys really did, and the ladies really went to town on their vehicles and got them ready, bits and pieces of spraying, bits and pieces of fabrication done. And then last year when they came back, it went through the roof. It just literally went through the roof. And I said to my judges whenever the lorries were coming in, you know, on the Friday on build day, I was looking at it, I was like, I don't know how you're going to do this. And, you know, this year again, it's went higher again. And even if you look at the European show scene this year, the level of attention to detail on all the trucks, we're starting to really, like, look at the American stuff, the level that they go to, the money that's being spent on not only these vehicles, but in the industry itself is phenomenal. I find it's absolutely phenomenal. But for me, that's where Drifter Style excels, because it's completely indoors. It doesn't matter where there's a hurricane outside, as long as the roof stays on, people can come in, they're warm, clean and tidy for the entire show. And good facilities, you know, the restaurants there, the bars there, and it leads to a nice experience. And, you know, people have asked me, will it put trucks outside? I'd love to put trucks outside, you know, because I would love to grow Drifter Style as such. But I think if you put trucks outside, you've got an us and them mentality then. You know, you've got the trucks outside. Like, if we just base it on this, if I've got the trucks all inside looking pristine and the public's meandering about having a great time, and outside in October, it's 11 degrees, the wind is howling and it's raining, there's nobody going to go out and look at them trucks. And that's not right on those guys outside, you know what I mean?
No, it's not. So, yeah, you're into your third year now with it. And, of course, well, the show evolved out of you establishing the Drifter Style Company, which grew out of your passion for truck detailing. So what does Drifter Style do on a sort of day-to-day basis when you're not involved with organising this annual event?
So you're basically in the shed cleaning. And if you're not in the shed cleaning, you're in the office invoicing or tax or VAT. This is the bit that people really don't see. You know, whenever you put a post up about Drifter Style, whatever it is, the Instagram, the Facebook, the LinkedIn, the TikTok, whatever it is, anything you see on that, it's me. Anything you see mentioning Drifter Style in any way, shape or form, it's me. Anything that goes to the accountant, it's me. Anything that goes for invoicing, it's me. Anything that cleans, it's me. I do everything. So it takes up an incredible amount of time. And, you know, there's a lot of people just think, oh, that truck comes in there, it gets cleaned and it goes out and the next one comes in. But, you know, you have to order bits and pieces. I sell for Solar Guard in the Hull, so you have to invoice them, order bits in, quote people. You've got other bits and pieces coming in, you know, and we're looking to expand the show, and that's you're doing all these things all the time. Don't get me wrong, it gets very, very stressful at times, but I love it. I love it really. Whenever you think about it, you know what I mean. And I do get annoyed at myself sometimes, because sometimes I forget that I love the process and I get frustrated or whatever it is. I think for me, the one thing that's the hardest to handle is people's expectations. People's expectations have just got to the point now where they want it now. They don't care how little it costs, because it's what I've always said is, when people go to buy a Volkswagen car or an Audi car, they'll say, right, okay, I like that car. They go into the forecourt to buy the car. That's it. They leave after they've paid for the car. But I find sometimes, now I've been blessed with most of my customers. They're great. But I've seen it in the haulage industry. It's almost like it's an acceptable thing to turn around and go, oh yeah, sure, I'll get you squared up for that. And you're like, well, no, you'll not get me squared up for it because I've already paid for it. You know what I mean? So yeah. when you pay for it, I'll give you it. It's as simple as that. But it seems to be throughout the industry. I don't know. Maybe it's just an Irish thing. I don't know.
Maybe it comes down from, you know, the horrid business practices of these very large companies who have payment terms, which, you know, have been extended on in 90 days and yeah. things like that. And it's kind of a horrible thing that's filtered on down in that sort of respect, where nothing's paid as it sort of happens. And I find that extremely frustrating, where you've got large, you know, stock market listed companies who do not pay hauliers for multiple weeks at a time. And it's not like they don't have the money or the ability to do it.
I genuinely don't know how they get away with it. There's not another industry in this world would accept that. You know, I remember hearing a man from years ago always used to say to me, if you can't buy it twice, don't buy it once. You know, and I always thought that was
That's a very good point in that, especially with certain models of used truck.
Yeah. If you can't buy it twice, don't buy it once, you know. And, you know, I apply a lot of things. My grandmother lived till 102, and I always fly by her quotations. You know what I mean? The wisest man in the room said nothing at all. You know, little things like that have carried me through the business, the time that I'm in business. You know, I'm 5 years in business in November. And there's been times, believe you me, where I've wanted to just open up both barrels, but it has served me well by saying nothing at all. Just let them cool down in the water that they boiled in was another one of hers, you know. So the industry, I find at the minute, is stagnant with a lot of things that are easily fixed. And I do believe that the problems of the industry are in the minority, that the majority of the industry are good, hard-working people who just want to put a bit of food on the table. And it seems to be that they're the quietest voice in the room, you know?
They always are. And I've spoken to somebody else who said that the hardest working guys, the best guys that he'd ever had, are the ones that would never ask for a wage rise, that would never ask for a top spec truck or anything like that. And the most vocal, the most difficult ones would be the ones that say, I want this, I want that. And it's curious. There's a lot of like very high expectations for what people want for vehicles these days. And in a way, it's painting yourself into a corner if, you know, when things are cut to the bone and you're like, well, I can't do that job unless I've got this high-end Scania.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you could easily do that job in something much more humble. But no, it's like,
I know a guy just lately who was taken out of a said model, and put into a brand new truck. I'm not going to mention the model, but put it, a brand new truck, leather seats, built-in sat-nav, fridge, freezer, microwave, everything, brand new. And he left because he deemed it a lesser truck. And I'm like, what's wrong with these people? What is going on in your head?
Yeah, it's, if you go and read it, I've got a lot of the old trucking drivers here. And like back in like the days when there were like severe recessions, back in like the, there was periods in the 70s, 80s, and the early 90s when interest rates were through the roof, and there would be guys who would be jumping at the opportunity to get out in a day cab set in Atkinson just so they had work.
Yeah, just to, exactly.
Just so they could earn money. And then you've got guys who are like, the sat-nav doesn't work in this brand new truck, so I cannot drive it. It's like, well, yes, you can.
Yeah, I love going into the old books. I've got them all in the shed here. I've got my oldest book is back to 1984. And is it 84? They did a test between a 401 set in Atkinson and a 112 Scania. And because normally back then they used to do the test, you know, the European test. But I just remember looking at the sat in Atkinson, and I often wonder on that note how the hell the British got it so wrong in not bringing the trucks into the future. I think it was arrogance for a start, but a sat in Atkinson 401 was a nice truck. Like it was.
Bob Beach has got some great insights on this. I've been speaking to him.
Yeah, Bob's a great lad.
On the phone and WhatsApp and things, because the next issue of Trucking Driver is the British Special, which is a total one-off for us, and it's kind of been my baby for a couple of years.
Brilliant.
And it's mostly focused on ERFs and Fodens, a bit of Seddon Atkinson. We've got some Ford Cargos in there. But, yeah, the British truck industry, it was... Like the guy from Gardner were severely against turbocharging.
Right.
They thought, no, this is a fad, this is a bad idea. And there was a company who were turbocharging Gardners.
Yeah.
And then Gardner threatened not to sell them any engines because to stop doing it. And then, of course, they were blindsided in a way because we're an island or islands, and it's a right hand drive market. They weren't considering what was going on across the water, and in some ways, the British manufacturers were selling a lot of operators the lorries that they wanted until they realised they could have something so much better. They were like, "Oh, wait a minute."
I find. Me personally, that it was from the backdrop of the Imperial British, where the stiff upper lip, they were like, I will not be told by a Swede, I will not be told by a Frenchman. But surely, when they've seen the first bubbles and the first F-88s and the 76 LB Scanias and stuff like that, surely they've seen the technology. Surely they've seen the size of the cabs. And, like, you know, it was overnight success for the Swedes whenever they came over here, you know, and rightly so, in my opinion, you know. But I would have thought that, you know, Foden and ERF especially were just that little bit ahead. Well, more ERF were that little bit ahead. And I don't understand why they didn't do a DAF and get into bed with Packard, you know, in an engine choice. But then maybe go, right, okay, I know they put the man diesel cab and stuff like that on, but it just didn't sit right.
The ERF story is one that, It's one that you can't even like still like openly talk about today because there was so much controversy with Western Star bought for like $27 million and then 4 years later sold it to MAN for like $110 million and then MAN very quickly found that there was a lot of shady accounting going on and what they had bought was not what they had expected to get and. The ultimate thing that put a stop to it quite quickly was Cummins and Caterpillar said, we're not doing engines beyond Euro 3.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't have engines. That was kind of the unfortunate end of it. And in a way, Foden had a couple of unique products of the 8-wheeler and the 6 before, and ERF were kind of halfway through doing the ECX, and the development got hampered with it. And I wanted to write a story about an alternate reality of what would needed to have happened for the British truck industry for at least like one independent manufacturer to have survived. And it really goes all the way back to the 60s, because at one point you had Seddon, you had Atkinson, you had Foden, you had ERF, all these small truck assemblers using the same components within a radius of like just a few miles of each other. Oldham and Sandbach and Preston. They were all, and then you had the giant of British Leyland as well. You had Bedford and Scammell and
AC.
They all got absorbed into each other, and it's incredibly complicated. And could it have been done? Yes, it could, but you have to go very much further back than what you think you might initially have to for things to have happened differently. I was told a story once, I think it was ERF had eventually went and bought a Volvo.
Yes.
And they decided, right, let's have a look at the competition here. Let's see what we've got. So they bought a Volvo to strip it down, brought it into the workshop, stripped it down, and the reaction was, we're in big trouble here, because this is way beyond us. Yeah, I love British trucks, and I love, there's something that fascinates me about the fact that they had so many different engines, and you didn't know what engine any one of them might have, and it might have been played with, and they could rock it off. But ultimately, as time went on, that sort of stuff became less and less viable. And then it costs billions to build trucks on a global scale, and they have to be built for a worldwide market.
That's right.
Which kind of turns us into the most controversial truck which we've seen in a long time, which is a Mercedes Actros Pro Cabin, which is the super aerodynamic new Actros, which caused so many people online to lose their minds. And I've grown to really like it. I'd say fair play to Mercedes for your bravery. I've said it in the podcast before. I keep seeing more and more examples of them where the livery's been done well. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's a good-looking truck. I would drive that. What you also need to know is that underneath that, with the diesel engines and the driveline, they've continually updated what they're doing. And Mercedes had a reputation for a while there for not pulling very well and having a clunky gearbox. And all of that's gone now. They've sorted all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they have is a really unique and interesting truck. And those aerodynamics aren't just done for fun. We've got Euro 7 coming on the way, and the truck manufacturers were not even entirely sure what Euro 7 entails, and it may only be 2 years away, and it may require the truck manufacturers to have their diesel engines fully emissions compliant for the minute they fire up, because at the moment they let them warm up a bit.
Yeah.
And it may be that as soon as it starts from cold, it's got to be super efficient. And you've got these overall efficiency targets with these vector scores. And the aerodynamic cabs that you're seeing now, Volvo with the aero has been like a gigantic success for them, something which they didn't even expect. 76% of new Volvo FHs are now aeros. And a lot of people aren't buying them for the aerodynamics. They're buying them because they think it looks cool or whatever, and it's the new model, and they're sticking all sorts of stuff to make it less aerodynamic.
You've touched on two subjects there, which brings me to my point, which I was going to make, and it is, you said the spectacular upheaval online with the release of the Pro Cabin and the eActros 600. And then you've also said about the success of the Volvo Aero. And I think it's two things at play there, or sorry, one thing at play. They're all worried about what each other is saying online. So if 10 people say that the Pro Cabin is ugly, they probably don't even know if the pro cabin's ugly. They just see the 10 people have said it's ugly, so I must say it's ugly without even really looking at it. And it's the same with the Aero. I mean, you can take a Volvo Aero, and you've got, like, the one that I had in my shed that I detailed for Volvo UK. I mean, anybody came into the shed, we were looking at it, and we're all going, wow, this is unbelievable, look at that, but look how far it comes out from the front, but it's so super stylish. And then I've just, Vivian Fraser and Son just released one, a 780 Aero there yesterday, and I sold the Solar Guard parts for it, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's absolutely stunning, gorgeous. But then if you take that and go to, say, and I'm not dissing this company at all because I know they're a fleet spec company, but if you take the likes of Maritime and you put the Aero into it with just the basic 6x2 working clothes truck, it's not just as attractive looking as what, say, Fraser's 780 is. And that's no disrespect to anybody driving for Maritime. Honestly, it's not. But I think it's all about what way you dress these trucks up nowadays. And if you, it's the same with the Pro Cabin. If you take a Pro Cabin and you stick a 6x2 pusher axle with not the Gigaspace, the lower, what's the next cab down from the Gigaspace?
Big Space.
Oh, the Big Space,
time.
Yes.
The last time that I'd looked at Gigaspace and then Big Space.
Big Space.
I think it's still the same.
But if you put a Big Space Pro Cabin with a 6x2 pusher, with no visor on it and the wheel nut alignment covers on it, it's going to look a little bit rough. Whereas if you take a Gigaspace Pro Cabin and it's on 55s with Durabrights on it, one colour looking super slick, you're not going to tell me that it looks bad because it doesn't. You're only saying it because you think everybody else is saying it. But I have a little bit of a soft spot for the Actros. I had a 630 before, whenever I met you the last time. I loved it.
Yeah, rare vehicle. And well, that's actually a turbo compound engine.
That's right.
Which Mercedes, Volvo have made big, you know, they've made a lot of publicity around their turbo compound engine offerings. And Mercedes have kind of been quiet about that. The difficulty for the truck manufacturers is that they've made incredible progress with their diesel engines.
Yeah.
They can't shout about it.
That's right, because the powers that be are telling them not to.
Yeah, the future, as far as the authorities for the EU, the politicians, the government is concerned, everything has to be electric. When in fact, the manufacturers have worked miracles
with
diesel engines to make them so clean, yet have more torque and better fuel economy. The fuel economy figures some people are getting from all manner of trucks across all manner of makes and models is just incredible now. It's not unusual to hear of people on light work, long distance, fridge work and things getting into the teens. In 10 years, like, well, longer than that ago, 10 was incredible. If you
put
10 miles to the gallon, it was unthinkable. And now you've got guys who you're like, oh yeah, I had an empty run back, and they're knocking on towards 20 miles per gallon.
Well, the best
blowing cars don't do that. Some cars don't do that.
No, and I was speaking with a good friend of mine who works for a local haulage company here, very big Scania presence, and the best truck in their fleet is the 660 V8, and they're like in the teens for fuel. And I'm, you know, if you had said to somebody 5 years ago, yeah, that 600, near 700 horsepower lorry is going to be doing 11, 12 miles to the gallon, you would have laughed at them, you know. But
that must also have a driver on it who knows how to drive it
and make use
of the technology that's in it as well.
Well, the same company that I'm talking about are very good that way. They encourage, me personally, I learned a lot there in how to coast a vehicle, how to read the road ahead, and, you know, get your vehicle ready that you're using your exhaust brake so that you don't even use your foot brake. And I mean, a Scania with a retarder on it is, I mean, me personally, if I'm buying a lorry tomorrow morning, there's two things that have to be compulsory on it: an isolator and a retarder. It's, there's no question there. It's the two things that I think you need straight away.
Some of the modern engine brakes are so good now that they're approaching retarder ability on the latest trucks. I drove a Scania recently, which had a next-gen R500, which had a two-stage engine brake on it.
Yeah.
Which I found bizarre. I didn't even know that Scania made a model with a two-stage engine brake.
Yeah.
I felt that stage one wasn't really enough, and stage two was like hammering the crap out of it.
Yeah.
Yet modern engine brakes have come on a long way as well. But I know what you mean about retarders, but you also have to... You have to tell drivers, and with all this technology, every truck is different and there's different methods about getting the best out of them.
Yeah.
And you've got to tell drivers that, you know, here, this has got a retarder on it, not an engine brake. So if you're empty on a wet road, don't haul that on stage five because you'll be trying jackknife.
I mean, it's funny you say that. I was going to come to that point that if you put it on stage five and a retarder, you're going to go for a merry dance around the place. But I think if again, it comes back to the whole people coming into the industry, that if you've got the ideal situation is your traffic planner or your driver trainer or, you know, somebody who's shown a person who's going out to drive a truck, they need to be in the industry or have been in the industry for years. And a perfect example is the use of a retarder. I mean, you can tell when you walk up to a truck with the retarder fitted in the truck and you look at the front wheels and there's brake dust everywhere, you know that he's not using the retarder. Whereas me as a cleaner, I was begging for a retarder in my lorry because I knew that I wouldn't have brake dust in my wheels.
I remember a few years ago there was a company, it was a misunderstanding of telematics. There was companies who'd taken on telematics packages but didn't understand how to use them, and they were pulling their drivers up because they were seeing that the truck's revs were going into the blue zone, which is where the retarder or the engine brake is being used to its full capacity.
Yeah.
And they were pulling the drivers up and saying, why are your revs so high? Why are they going into this blue zone?
Yeah.
Surely that's bad. Don't do that. And it's like, no.
It's the truck.
It's literally designed to do.
Yeah, because whenever I first got the 630, I remember coming down the hill. There was a three-stage engine brake. And coasting down the hill, hit the first, second, hit the third. And my God, it went, I don't know, I think it was over 2,000 revs. And I was like, I put it back into two, and I phoned back to the garage, and I, you know, because I'd never experienced this before, this real, and they were like, no, it's perfectly fine, work away at it. And it, I don't think I ever got used to it. I never got used to it. I just felt...
Like I didn't with that two-stage Scania engine brake. It was constantly banging it into the blue.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're hurting it, but that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah, but I think another one of the modern day things that I point blankly refuse to do, I understand the need for idle time, you know, keep it at a minimum in your truck. But this whole thing where you've come in after a 300 kilometer trip, one hit, I don't know, you know, whatever it is, and you have to switch the vehicle off. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I've never...
you don't do that.
I know that they will tell you...
Yeah.
That no, it's absolutely fine.
It's not.
After you've just driven a truck at full weight...
Yeah.
...and it's strained its arse off to get back to the yard, which might be in the middle of nowhere...
Yeah.
...switch it off, and I'm like, nah, I've always felt that I should let it have a rundown period where I just let it settle down again. Before I switch it off.
The turbo's still spinning.
Apparently you don't need to do that anymore, but something inside of me tells me, especially with the way that they're going about long life oil, which isn't life oil at all in any way. The long life oil thing is
it's a joke.
A whole thing in itself. which is all related to R&M contracts and, you know.
But
that's a rabbit hole in itself.
I think you've touched on something there.
I always felt that you should let it cool down and relax after a really hard run before you switch it off while it's boiling hot, and then you've got all this super hot oil, super hot coolant, super hot metal just sitting there to go and sort of bake,
hang,
I guess.
Hang itself. But like, you hit something there, was the long life oil. And I actually take it as offensive that they would insult your intelligence to think that you're going to just go, oh yeah, no problem, that's all right. You know, oh right, okay, because you've told me that. Listen, the basics of an engine is it needs oil, and it needs oil changed. Yes. It's simple. If you don't know that, then yeah, maybe you're the problem, yes, you know. And I find that lack of common sense within the industry a little bit alarming for the future, you know.
Well, it all comes down to R&M contracts. When a lot of trucks go into enormous fleets, so the fleet manager sees the price and goes, well, that's really cheap because that only needs its oil changed a couple of times during the time that we have it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you own it yourself, you probably want to change the oil at least twice as much.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As soon as it starts, check the oil regularly, and as soon as it starts to use oil, change it. Because if you're topping it up, the oil has lost its chemical compound, whatever makes it work, and it has to be changed. But of course, it doesn't work like that with a lot of these cases. And then when somebody comes along to go and buy the truck when it's 3 years old or anything like that, see if it's been fully serviced. Yeah, but the oil's been like water in it for half that time.
That's right. And I've got a 2021 Ford Ranger, and it gets serviced every December. I know my mechanic, the last time I went over, he said, you're not doing the miles to warrant a service. I said, I don't care. It's service. It doesn't matter. Every December, I've got it down for a service. And there's nothing better when you pull the dipstick on an oil to check the oil, and it's lovely and clean oil that comes out. When you open it up, but it's black, like it's just been taken out of the ground, you know that, yeah, there's a chance that this thing hasn't been serviced. But yeah, it's definitely concerning. I think it was Martin Tomlinson from Volvo told me they did a survey. I could be wrong, so if I'm wrong, I apologise, Martin, it wasn't you. But they did a survey, and the number one, what this generation would want in a truck, did a survey, and it came back overwhelmingly that they wanted Apple CarPlay. And I was like, wow. So it's only what you get for themselves in the truck. It's not for the betterment of the truck. I suppose everything nowadays is built to fall apart, but if you're only thinking about Apple CarPlay, you're not really worried about putting oil in a vehicle. But then again, I suppose you're not allowed to do it nowadays, you know? You're not allowed to do your daily checks.
Well, a lot of them don't have dipsticks on them, or if there is a dipstick, you might have to raise the cab to get to it. So you have to check the oil through going through a menu on a screen.
That's right.
And there's a lot of guys haven't been trained or introduced to the features or the interfaces in your lorry. And if you're not familiar with dealing with all these new digital interfaces to go and find these things, it's like every truck I tend to get into, if it's got adaptive cruise control, the adaptive cruise will be switched off because a lot of guys don't like it, because they're like, oh, I'm going to get stuck behind a Tesco lorry or whatever. But there's a screen. You can usually switch it to a screen which will tell you the speed of the vehicle in front of you. So you can see on your dash screen, when you're driving along the road, you're coming up behind somebody. It will show you on the screen, he's doing 50 miles an hour. I'd better get ready and prepared because I'm wanting to go and pull out past him here.
Yes.
But you have to be able to know the interfaces. One of the most interesting ones is if you overtake somebody in a Renault, and you can see on the older Renault, you can see on the screen if it's still in kilometres.
Yes.
Because that shows you that they don't know how to take out kilometres per hour and put it into miles per hour.
It's the first thing I do in a rental car if I'm out foreign. The first thing I do is put it on the miles per hour. And then halfway down the road, I'm like, no, it's kilometres over here, so I need to check the kilometres. And I put it back to kilometres. But it's just old habits die hard. I still have miles per gallon and I'm still, obviously miles per hour, you know.
Yeah, I always go into units.
Yeah.
When you're part of going to units, and then I go into, you set all the units to how you want them to be. You might, because you want miles per gallon, but you might also want something else in kilometres.
Yeah.
And you might want something. You can get that mix of units, which Britain loves to use, because we're a complete mishmash of imperial and metric. The trailer will tell you its height in metres on it, with such and such fifth wheel, all the bridge heights are in feet. So you're like, then you've got to go into your phone and work out, right, what's 4.5 metres in feet and height?
So I can't that's right. The height,
yeah. The height thing.
Well, with Mulgrews, whenever I drove with Mulgrews, it was a constant threat was low bridges, because we were running at 4.6 metres high all the time, you know. And you had to do the maths pretty quick whenever you were sitting there. Okay, that bridge is 15.3. Can I get under it? I think I can. I'm not sure. Hold on. Try it out. And then you would get under it, you know. But I just don't think this generation seem to worry about the stuff that I worried about back then. You know what I mean? Will I make that destination tonight? Can I do this legally? They don't care.
A lot of us don't. A lack of. I want to see a driver CPC course brought in on geography and the road network to explain to people what the. I wrote an article on the Trucking Driver website. I wrote a few articles which are really far too long. They're like a couple of thousand words, and I'd put them on the Trucking Driver website in the past few weeks. And like one of them I'd mentioned was like just general geography and understanding of the road network, because there's a lot of guys that don't know. You're like, oh, right, so the M42 is knackered. Yeah, but or the M6 is knackered. Well, you can jump off at Stoke and go around the A50. Or if you're up north, the A66 is shut. Yes, it's terrible, but you can go up and go across the A69. And a lot of guys will blindly follow sat navs and won't use a map. Although I'd written it as how you use Google Maps as a combination of using modern technology with old school technology with a map, with the caveat that it's still a car sat nav. So
that's
you
right.
have to be very wary that it might try and reroute you. And you have to have a look, but it does have street view on it where you can literally look at the street you'll be delivering to. So you can look at the street and go, all right, am I going to have to back in here? If I come from the left, I'm going to blind side. If I come from the right, I can come in off my own side. So I'll phone ahead and ask them what it is that I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people, they just want to follow something blindly and put complete and absolute trust
funny on Google Maps that you're talking about. What I used to do was I would go maybe 3 miles up the road from where I was going to and check a landmark if it was a car dealership or if it was a pub or a garage or whatever it is. And I'd say, right, okay, once I see that, I know I have to get ready. It's going to be coming up on the left-hand side here. I would have went on further, maybe a mile and a half from the delivery point. It could have been a school, whatever it was. And, you know, so I was getting ready in advance to get ready to stop or, as you say, blindside reverse. But that's another thing in the general public. Nobody has time. You can, everybody's filming you now to make a mistake. You know, there's nobody jumping out and going, okay, look, I'll watch you on this side, whatever it is. And I don't know whether that's down to the fact that, you know, there's the legal side of things. People don't want to get involved in case they get caught up in a legal thing. But
I've often found that drivers from abroad will be very willing to help you.
Yeah.
If you're in like a truck stop and you've come in late at night and you've got to do it, you're like, ah, this is like the last bloody space in the place and I'm tired and I know that there's like numerous people sitting in their cabs kind of half watching you.
Yeah.
If somebody jumps out to help, to back you in, it's quite often somebody from, you know, a foreign track.
Yeah.
Who's like, no, you know,
You get the bad press.
Turn it straight. You'll get it in there, yeah. And it's a matter of never, ever tarring people with a broad brush. You should never, ever do that. Not everybody's the... Not every group of people is the same. Not all hauliers or drivers or, you know...
Yeah, but that's funny.
Places you deliver to are the same. You've got to take everybody individually as you find them and make it individual, you know.
And funny, this year at Drifter Style Show, that's what I noticed in the crowd. There was young, old, and everything in between who were involved in the industry, which I was so happy about, you know, because I just thought maybe this will appeal to the new drivers, you know, the lads who are in the show scene. But there was all the old hands there as well, which was, you know, I really liked that. That was made me feel good. And I always try to put a sprinkle of the older stuff in with the new stuff with my show, you know. And hopefully that's what we can bring back. You know, we can bring back a bit of, as you say, you know, a driver getting out to help another driver park up. If we can put that message across through the show or through even, you know, the RTX, whatever it is, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that you see that you don't see, like driver WhatsApp groups, which I've spoken before about in the podcast, where guys can ask questions like, you know, I'm going here for the first time, how do I get here? And a couple of drivers will pop up and give you really detailed, involved instructions on how to get in somewhere and the dangers involved with it, because if you go and try and drive straight in, you're going to end up hanging on the gate and stuff like that. But you don't necessarily see it because it's done through a group on social media that's not like publicly available. And there is still a camaraderie out there among drivers, but it's changed in a way. Yes, it could be better, but like you say, nobody's got the time.
Yeah.
You don't have the time to go and stop and help somebody who's broken down at the side of the road like you would have done in the 1960s.
Yeah.
You could have got your tools out and gone and sorted somebody out and got them back on the road again. It's just not possible in that way anymore. Things have moved on.
Well, funny, it is something that I've looked at in recent years, and I said this in a couple of videos that I've put out, that the majority do want to get out there and help. It's just we don't hear about the people that do get out and help, because I think it's been done and dusted and over with no phones involved. Whereas when it's a negative one, they have been filming.
Yes.
And they've been, you know, oh, look at this bull, can't reverse in. To save his life, whatever it is. And yeah. It's put online and you get the trolls coming on and they're liking it and laughing about it and sharing it and blah, blah, blah. So it's blown out of all proportion. But I think the majority of the people do still help. It's just they haven't decided to be, you know,
they don't want to put it on media and get like a sort of national thanks for it or anything like that. They're just like, yeah, that's it, job done, job over. And of course, reversing is one of the most, when you're a newly qualified driver and you've been fast tracked through things, and we usually, like, I keep saying to people, do not knock working your way up. If you start in 7.5 tonners and work up into like 18, 26 tonners,
the best way.
Before you go into Artex, it's the best way because you can get a real apprenticeship. And you can make a lot of rookie mistakes in those rigids that don't really matter.
I think
you can get out of them again. But if in an Arctic, it can be much more difficult.
Yeah, if we also take a look at the females that have come into the industry, I think it's been very positive. You know, they've integrated in brilliant. And I've always said, lads, you'll get out and you'll back a lady reversing onto a loading bay or whatever it is. Why not do it for the lads? Like, you know, for a long time there, I think the industry had got to the point where it was like, oh, it's a lady, we'll have to do this, we'll have to do that. I think those days should be, especially this modern day and age, when you can't really say it, you know what I mean? But I think that it's, right, we're all drivers now. Just be a driver. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. Be a driver. Simple as that. You know, my pet hate is these ones with I don't even know who they're called, but they all use their feminine side to get where they're going and stuff like that. That really pisses me off, for want of a better expression. But it's just, it's like, no, you're here to do a job. Your job is you carry a cargo from A to B, B to C, and so forth and so on. Because you're a particular sex doesn't mean to say that you're going to get anywhere further or anywhere less than anybody else. You know what I mean? Just stop with that nonsense.
We're going to start running, hopefully in 2026, a series of women in haulage, focusing on a whole load of different roles, not all just drivers, but everything from truck sales to directors of small firms to planners to everything else. And I found, well, a lot of female drivers as well, that they quite often come from a background where their dad's been a driver, or they're from an agricultural background. And if they've been driving tractors since they're a kid, they will blow you to bits on blindside reversing.
They are
forced to be reckoned with. And I think having women in the industry, more women in the industry, is a really, really good thing in general, because they're much less likely to put up with bad conditions, whereas men are.
Absolutely.
Men are just like, oh, I'm just going to go for a pee down here, and I don't care, and all this. And women are just far less likely to put up with all of the nonsense and poor conditions that we are. They're more likely to go and say something and say, this isn't acceptable to us. So I'm hoping that that's going to be a good series for us in 2026. And I'm quite excited to run that. I've got some good articles lined up. I've got a really, really good young mechanic as well, because there's so much he can do in the trucking and haulage industry. And although people say it's terrible, it's bad, why would you want to do this job? Go and watch a train station in the vicinity of London, within 100 miles of London, and watch all these people in their suits getting on those trains to go and spend 2 hours getting to London to spend a whole day in a brutal corporate office environment to come all the way home again. Would you swap driving a lorry to go and do that? Well, I tell you, there's absolutely no chance. There are far, far worse jobs that you could do than driving a lorry.
But funny, I think also what women bring to the table is they're, for the most part, they're very calm. And they will troubleshoot a situation, you know what I mean? Whereas sometimes men will throw the toys out of the pram and they'll get irate and they'll get, whereas the woman will, she will think it through and she'll come to a rational decision, and then it seems to calm the whole thing down. Plus, I also feel that when a lady comes in, men will... they mightn't be just as aggressive, especially in RDCs. Now, I have met some animals in RDCs, both male and female. but I think when you come up and you see a woman at the counter, you tend to not come up with as much aggression. So there is that calming effect as well from ladies in the industry. But I just think it's a benefit to the industry as well. But as I said to you before about the ones that think because they're female that they're going to get special attention, I'm not a big fan of those ones.
I know the ones you mean.
On the other side of that, you've also got that in the male side of things. You know, they think because they drive a big shiny truck that they garner special attention, and it's like, lads, now just stop there. I remember, I'll give you an example of it. I was in the boat one Friday night, and this old boy got on to the boat, and just a normal dressed gentleman, work boots, jeans, check shirt with his key ring attached to his belt buckle, and just a nice man. And I was just, we were getting food and I was chatting to him, you know, and all the boys I was with and the other guys there, as I call them, the medallion crew. There was always two types, one in tracksuit giving off about the office, the other one had a medallion on him and he was giving off about where they'd sent him and, you know, they could stick this job, blah, blah, blah. They were all on the boat the next week at the same time. But this old gentleman, I sat beside him and I says, where are you? where are you coming from? And he's just on his way back from Tangiers. You know what I mean?
That's Africa. That's Morocco.
And I was like, Tangiers. And he goes, yeah, we take clothes up from Tangiers up to Dublin. And I was like, wow, this man, so unassuming, driving just a plain white FH4 with a white trailer. You wouldn't have known, you would have thought he was probably over in Bells Hill in Scotland and back in again. And he's coming up from Tangiers. And I was like, see, you never judge a book by its cover.
Never assume, no. Now, just to round the podcast off, because we're getting on for an hour.
Absolutely.
Prior to us recording, we're having a bit of a chat, and I had mentioned the phrase tramping.
Yeah.
which is a be-all, end-all for being down the road for the week, spending multiple nights out in the truck. And you had rightfully said that tramping is, you know, a tramp, it undersells what you're doing. It gives like a low esteem sort of feel to what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
And we were thinking, well, what is this, another simple phrase to replace tramping?
Yeah, well, I mean, opening
that up to the listeners as well, because we were thinking about it and talking about, yeah, I'm doing national long distance.
Yeah.
I'm doing, you know.
National
distance, yeah, that was it. Because tramping, yeah, it just feels like you have nowhere to wash. You have you're just making the best of what you have with your stick.
Exactly.
Over your shoulder with your bag tied on it, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, it was, yeah, I'd see these companies putting in advertisements, and it was trampers and tramping. And I was like, if you wanted to come up with two words that is going to put you off doing that job, and then you see, for the most part, some of their trucks and the state that they're in and the conditions that they're in, yeah, it's tramping and tramping. But if you get a company like, and I'm only saying Mulgrews because I worked for Mulgrews before myself, so I know their gear. And their gear is top of the top pops. Like, it's really, really good gear and good work, clean, tidy work. And if you're trying to bring somebody in and you do local work, national distance or long distance, if you word it like that, you straight away then encourage somebody who's outside the industry. Oh, I like that. National distance, where do I go? Oh, I'm mainland UK. Or if you're in Ireland, Irish work. Oh, that sounds okay. You know, it sounds clean, it sounds fresh, it sounds tidy. But tramping, it's like, no.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to explore the country.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that so many people don't get to do, especially if you get to do, you get to do work which takes you all over the place.
Exactly.
Yeah, and tramping... grossly undersells it, really.
Well, funny, when I started Drifter Style, that was the one thing that I always said to myself. I always said, the worst can happen is I go back to driving a truck, which is what I loved. You know, it's not as if, you know, there was tears in my eyes getting out of the truck the last day, because I had given myself to the industry. I'd give the guts of 10 years with Mulgrews, and I'd been away from home all that time, and it was a bittersweet moment. Now I'm away from it. It's not that I don't want to go back to it. I want to just stick with what I'm at, because I'm still within the industry, which is easy. However, I do believe if I left the industry completely, I would have been back in it already. You know,
it's a curious thing, though, because so many people say it gets in your blood.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Once you have lorries and traveling and distance and exploring, once that gets into you, it becomes a part of you and it never ever leaves you.
I'll tell you another thing which is peculiar. I obviously, the trucks that come into my shed, for the most part, they're high end trucks. They've got an interior in them. Their exteriors are done. But every so often I get, I've just finished for David Brown there, 620. Beautiful. 4x2, factory finished on our 2016 coffee maker, fridge, freezer, microwave, all that, twin air leather seats, manual box. But the truck is, you know, as it left the factory, and it's still like that. And, you know, there was just something so lovely about nothing on this truck. This was just a truck which was bought for to do a job, and it was doing its job. And there was something really refreshing about just that old school feel of jumping in, gear stick, leather seat. Now, don't get me wrong, it had sat nav and so forth, because it was 2016. It was just the last of the...
There is that, but there's something... There's a real purity and a real simplicity to the last of those Scanias.
Yeah.
And the ones that lasted the longest were like the old shape DAF XF and CF.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is it. Because you could still get... The last of the manual ones were registered in 2023, and that is the last of what I would call the pure old school lorries, where you've got three dials for a heater, you've got a radio you can pull out and replace with whatever you want. It's got two dials for the speedometer and the rev counter, and that's really an end of an era.
Well, I mean, I think it was Bob Beach, or maybe it was yourself, who read in the book. It has everything that you don't need, or everything that you don't need in a lorry. But everything that you did need was there. You know what I mean?
You can go too far in the wrong direction, which perhaps in danger of, but that's a discussion for another time.
Yep. Yep, I understand.
It's been absolutely fantastic to chat to you. I've really enjoyed it. 11th and 12th of October, we will be at the Icon Centre for the Drifter Style Show. I strongly recommend you get along there as well. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. You're going to see the most incredible trucks. You're going to have the greatest of times. And yes, David, thank you very much for joining me on this Truck and Driver podcast. If there's anything else you want to add, say now or forever hold your peace until the next time I get you on the podcast.
It was a pleasure. A pleasure as always, Doogie. Yes, but just to close, the 11th and 12th of October, Drifter Style back again. We've got the same amount of flair coming from Europe, and we've got actually some crackers coming over from the UK. We've got one lone ERF, which I was very happy to get in. There was actually three or four of them come in, but I'm tight for space. So I was like, right, I need one in at the very least. You know what I mean? I would put a fleet of them in if I could, but you're going to have a couple of old ones, couple of older ones, and then the rest will all be the flair that has been part of the fabric from Drifter Style from day one. So yeah, get yourselves down to the Icon in the 11th and 12th of October.
Fantastic. Right, I will let you crack on, because I know you've got a lot of work to do today. I've dragged you away from what you're supposed to be doing to come and do this.
No worries.
So David Henning, thank you very much. It's a big 10-4 for me. I will catch up with you in the next couple of weeks.
M4. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tires. Fortune Tires and International Tires, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.